Involvement with the criminal justice system is life-changing. It matters.
Having a justice system that works is a really important part of a democratic society.
I'm Penelope Gibbs, Director of Transform Justice.
I'm Rob Allen. I've worked in and around criminal justice all my career.
This is the Transform Justice podcast, throwing light on the criminal justice system.
Hearing from people who know.
It's about whether the system's fair.
And what can be done to make it better.
Hello. We're straying slightly away from criminal justice to discuss antisocial behaviour and how it's dealt with. We're talking about a wide range of behaviour which causes harassment, alarm, or distress, but which is not classed as a crime. I'm joined by my co-host Rob Allen and by two experts, barrister James Stark and Dr. Rona Epstein, researcher at Coventry Law School. Rob, you were around in the New Labour era when a new system of tackling antisocial behaviour was launched. What do you remember about that?
When New Labour were in opposition, Jack Straw, the Shadow Home Secretary, got very concerned about what were called squeegee merchants, people who came up to cars in traffic jams at traffic lights and cleaned their windscreens and then demanded money for doing so. And he thought this was a particularly bad problem. But there were a whole range of issues that kind of got bundled together under this term antisocial behaviour. And as you say, it became a big policy objective, and the ASBO was the most notable part of that.
Yeah. So, James, ASBOs were in the news the whole time in the 1990s, but no one has heard of their replacement, which are called injunctions or ASBEs. Can you give an example of where an injunction's been used and maybe abused?
Yes, the injunction provision can be used in respect of conduct that is capable of causing a nuisance. That has meant that it has been used in cases that one would never have expected. A case that the Civil Justice Council picked up in particular was a case of Festival Housing and Marie Jones. And Marie Jones was a young woman who tended to hang around in the town centre, and she would beg for money, and an injunction was made against her.
So that was an injunction to forbid her from begging?
Yes. And one day she asked for money from an operative of the housing association or the local authority. It's not entirely clear who they were employed by. And she asked for 50p from him. And that was reported to the organisation that obtained the injunction against her. And they applied to commit her to prison for breaking the injunction. The district judge in the county court was concerned that she was not represented.
You mean she didn't have a lawyer?
Yes, she didn't have a solicitor or a barrister or anyone to represent her, and tried to obtain representation for her by getting the court staff to contact local solicitors, and they couldn't find anyone. So they just decided to proceed, and he sent her to prison for 6 months for asking for 50p.
Rona, you've done some research on antisocial behaviour, and as Penelope said, it's often in the public mind, it's teenagers who are unruly or causing problems. But your research found that there are a lot of vulnerable adults. There was one, particularly Floyd Carruthers. What was his story?
Floyd Carruthers was living in social housing, and he was a difficult neighbour. And not surprising, because he has 20 years been living with a schizophrenia diagnosis and being in variable mental health. There was an injunction placed on him by the housing office not to disturb his neighbours. And on only one occasion, he did disturb his neighbour. He banged loudly on her door and shouted through it at 5 in the afternoon and again at 7 in the evening. The police were called. When he came before the county court, he'd already served 10 days in custody, and the judge considered that the right thing to do with this misbehaviour was to impose a sentence of 4 months imprisonment, despite the fact that he was mentally ill and despite the fact that it was a first breach. And the judge also said, "I have no evidence before me of criminality." Mr. Carruthers was not only mentally ill, but physically very fragile. He had a heart valve replacement. He was sent to Birmingham prison. He didn't eat for 4 days. He refused food. The prison did not call any medical personnel. And on the fourth day of him refusing meals, the prison officer entered the cell, found him collapsed, called an ambulance, and 10 days later he died in hospital of sepsis. The coroner said the cause of death was prison neglect, but I don't think anybody could deny that what led up to it was a prison sentence of 4 months imposed on a man who was mentally and physically frail.
Yeah, and it's difficult to see what was the purpose, really, of the prison sentence. I mean, James, these new injunctions, as I understand it, were supposed to provide a framework for tackling the root causes of some of these problems, like begging, like maybe causing disturbance and so on. Do they do that?
No, I don't think there's any evidence that these new antisocial behaviour injunctions even have a deterrent effect, because people don't know about them. I mean, I don't think ASBO's had a deterrent effect. One of the issues that was common with ASBO's was the badge of honour, certainly amongst the under 18s, to show you were so tough that you'd got an ASBO. And the other provisions that were meant to come in with these new injunctions in 2014 was that there would be supervision requirements that could be imposed upon the injunctions. And that would require not only the individual to stop engaging in the antisocial behaviour that was alleged and had been found to have taken place, but also in activities that would be meant to address the underlying causes of the antisocial behaviour. But these are very, very seldom used, and you can't find anyone to supervise these. I've never, ever come across an injunction where there's been a supervision requirement made, and the Civil Justice Council couldn't find any either.
Who would do the supervision? Would it be a local authority or a health authority?
It would depend on the nature of the supervision requirement. So it might be, for example, if you could get help in relation to alcohol misuse, the person supervising it would be the person at the organisation that would be providing treatment.
In my research, I've read 308 judgments, and only one of them mentioned any requirement to attend any kind of support system. The defendant was in a psychiatric hospital. The judge said to the court that he was sending her from the psychiatric hospital straight to prison for 6 months. And he said she was asked to engage with the mental health services and refused to do so. And then there you see the problem. A person can refuse support.
So, Rona, what on earth was the point of sending somebody from a psychiatric unit into imprisonment? What had this woman done that was so bad?
She'd been mentally ill all her life and was a difficult neighbour. She'd made a noise with a wheelie bin. She'd allowed her flat to become dilapidated. And when the housing officer called, she let forth a stream of vile, abusive, obscene language. And in that way, she'd broken her injunction. Obviously, absolutely nothing was going to be achieved by it. And this is, again, what the judges say in the judgments. I can dismiss the case, or I can fine you, or I can impose suspended or immediate imprisonment. And the judges seem to be implying that they wish there were other options.
James, you've said that you've seen very few of these positive orders, as it were. But have you ever seen a case where you thought that the actual injunction had a great effect on stopping somebody's difficult behaviour?
Sometimes they do, if the behaviour concerns someone who is a malicious individual who has completely full capacity, doesn't have mental health issues. There are unpleasant people in our communities who may try and bully their neighbours or take offence against their neighbours and then respond very nastily to them. And that is supposedly what the original antisocial behaviour provisions and these provisions were intended to deal with. But the reality is that a very significant majority of the cases that I see now don't concern that sort of nasty neighbour dispute. They concern people with mental health problems. They concern people with problems that may be consequent on mental health problems, such as alcohol abuse, that means that they kick off with their neighbours in a way when they're drunk that they don't do otherwise.
And then they're slapped with an injunction, but that doesn't resolve their alcohol problems.
No. And if they get drunk again, they're hardly going to then be saying to themselves, oh, I've got an injunction, I must stop shouting at Mrs. X. And that's one of the real issues with these injunctions, is it's long been the law's view that you shouldn't really make injunctions that you have no means of properly enforcing. The purpose of committing someone to prison for breaking an injunction is to stop them engaging in the behaviour. And if they're not going to stop engaging in the behaviour because mental illness is at the bottom of it, you shouldn't be making an injunction against someone who doesn't have capacity to comply with it.
Yeah, and to my knowledge, absolutely zero is done in prison to try and change the behaviour of those who have been in prison because of antisocial behaviour. I mean, there's no programs which are done or anything like that.
No, they are in some ways regarded as a civil prisoner because contempt of court, which is what they go to prison for in relation to antisocial behaviour injunctions, goes before a county court judge, so a civil court judge. They then decide whether or not it is necessary to send someone to prison for breaking the order and make the prison sentence. Otherwise, their powers are very limited, either to renew the injunction or adjourn the case to see if you behave in the future or fine you. So, as Rona said, the judges are right in some ways to say that their options are limited. That doesn't mean they have to send people to prison.
So basically, the decision-making has moved from the criminal courts to the civil courts a bit following these 2014 changes. James, do you think that's, on balance, improved things or made them worse or really not made terribly much difference?
I think it's improved things in one particular way, and that's because the antisocial behaviour order, when it was prosecuted as a crime, it was either in the magistrate's court or, if it was very serious, would go to the Crown Court. And the real issue that we had in relation to magistrate's courts, certainly until the Sentencing Council brought out a framework for antisocial behaviour orders, the sentencing could be wildly excessive. You may remember the case of the woman who had an antisocial behaviour order in Bristol made against her because she kept trying to commit suicide. And an antisocial behaviour order made against a farmer because his pigs kept escaping, which clearly were never intended to lead to someone having an antisocial behaviour order made against them.
Rona, you've looked at 300-odd cases. Do you still see this wide, excessive range of sentencing?
Absolutely, I do. Two examples, both of the judgments imposed imprisonment, and both of them mentioned mental ill health. And these were two men in two different places who were feeding pigeons. Bristol Court imposed, I think it was 6 weeks, immediate imprisonment for feeding pigeons. It's almost unbelievable. And the mental health issue comes up again and again and again. And the addiction, again, addiction is a mental health issue, but specifically drug taking, leaving drug paraphernalia around the place. I mean, it's all unpleasant, but is it criminal? No, it isn't. It's prosecuted under antisocial behaviour. But then you come to the court's power to impose up to 2 years in prison. That's the incoherence, in my view, of this law.
Have you got examples of real inconsistency in otherwise sort of similar cases, Rona, from the research you've done?
Yes. What struck me was the case of Gillian Marriott. This was in March of this year. This lady, once again, mentally ill. This is stated by the court. Her antisocial behaviour takes the form of dialing 999 again and again and again. Now, this is a crime, but she was not taken before the court and accused of a criminal offence where she could have had a probation officer, a pre-sentence report. It was taken to court under antisocial behaviour. The court imposed 6 months immediate imprisonment. She went to prison. The day she came out, she immediately dialed 999. She was almost immediately taken for having broken the injunction. And this time, the court imposed 12 months immediate imprisonment. So I looked up the criminal law, and the criminal law said that misuse of a telephone to dial emergency services is a crime, and that the maximum prison sentence is 6 months. So here is the county court doubling the maximum sentence under criminal law, pursuing it under civil law.
And in fact, she ended up, from what I can work out, spending nearly a year locked up for dialing 999, which does seem quite extreme. So James, you said that the ASBO sentences or sanctions given in the magistrates' court were wildly excessive, but surely both lots are wildly excessive.
Yes, the Civil Justice Council recognised the real problem, which was there were no sentencing guidelines at all for county court judges in relation to antisocial behaviour injunctions. The general principles had always been set out that you should never send someone to prison for breaking an injunction unless there is no alternative option but to do so. But what appears to have happened in a lot of these cases is you've got a massive disconnect between the seriousness of the behaviour alleged, such as asking for 50p, and the sentences that are being imposed. And that appears largely to be because the courts are overly concentrating on the fact that a court order is being disobeyed. But if a court order is being disobeyed because someone has significant mental health problems, that really doesn't help much. The Court of Appeal, at the end of last year, handed down a ruling saying that county court judges in future should follow the sentencing guideline proposals set out in the Civil Justice Council's report. And that in particular looked at the seriousness of what was being done and the seriousness of the harm that was being caused. And what this judge extraordinarily decided in this case of Marriott was that the harm was very serious and what she'd done was very serious, ringing 999, when what the Civil Justice Council intended, that was to deal with cases such as, you know, where someone caused significant violence. And the Civil Justice Council was very concerned with the point that Rona made, that sentences were being handed down for contempt of court, i.e. breaking a court order, that were far more serious than the criminal courts would possibly make for the same conduct in the criminal court.
James, can I ask, in these cases, do people have a right to a lawyer, an illegally aided lawyer to represent them? And in the case you've described, would it have been possible to lodge an appeal against the severity of the sentence?
Yes, you could. Legal aid is available to defend committal proceedings. In practice, that means that you can either get legal aid help from a criminal lawyer or from civil lawyers who have done an injunction-like case. The problem is that a lot of criminal lawyers do not wish to take these cases on. They're not experienced in them. It's not the same as defending criminal proceedings. And there are far too few housing lawyers who do the civil cases available to cover all the cases. And that means a lot of people aren't represented, even when they want to be represented, and even when the courts are trying to get them represented.
James was referred to, and he was on the working party for the Civil Justice Council report, and they found that about half were sent to prison or otherwise sanctioned with no legal representation.
Rona, the Civil Justice Council report, we've mentioned it a few times now, it concluded by saying that current practices are clearly unsatisfactory and require immediate and significant redress. What in particular worried them?
Well, what struck them particularly was the complete absence of data, as opposed to the criminal statistics where you can look up how many people last year were accused, found guilty, imprisoned for any number of different offences. There's no data. And in fact, our data, these 308 cases, must be very partial because we only have data from 50 different county courts. Well, there are 170 county courts in England and Wales. So what's happening in the other 120?
I agree with you that this is a data and evidence-free zone because I've tried to look at it myself. And it's not just that you can't even see the number of cases. There is zilch evidence about the effectiveness of the different options available. So nobody's followed up people who've had an injunction which they haven't breached. Why haven't they breached it? Nobody's followed up. Imprisonment, what happens afterwards? And so it's all anecdotal stuff, including, I have to say, from the government. James, you were on the advisory group looking at this Civil Justice Council report on what was happening in antisocial behaviour cases. This sounds like an excellent report, but it came out a couple of years ago. None of its recommendations, I think, have been implemented, and it's seldom mentioned in any policy stuff about ASB. It strikes me that it's been pushed into very long grass here.
Yes, I think that's right. And I think partly it's cost, and partly because, you know, being tough and hard about antisocial behaviour is seen as politically a good thing. And it's been seen like that, unfortunately, since the antisocial behaviour order that the Labour government brought in the late 1990s. It was all about being tough on crime and the being tough on the causes of crime rather went into the long grass.
Yeah, I mean, Rona, I was going to ask you about that. Why do you think it is so hard to get attention on these kinds of cases, which on the face of it look like, you know, if not miscarriages of justice, certainly very, very rough justice? Is it because the accused are, you know, people that won't naturally get a lot of sympathy? Or is it, as James says, because the government want to appear tough? What do you think?
Well, I think there's several reasons. Leicester County Court sent a man to prison for 1 year for two incidents of begging in the London Road in Leicester. And when I asked the Law Commissioner dealing with this, do you know that county courts are sending somebody to prison for 1 year for begging? He said to me, no, I didn't know. So even the Law Commission, they don't get highlighted, because the people doing the antisocial behaviour are the people whom, to put it in its simplest form, nobody likes in our society. The people who are not mentally ill in a quiet way, depression and so on, they show their mental illness by being loud, by being noisy, by using abusive language, drinking, use of drugs. And on the other hand, on the other side, you do have the victims. These are ordinary, hardworking people who want to live in peace. And because of the physical proximity and thin walls and bad building of much of social housing, they're the victims in the story. So that's one I do understand. The other one I have less sympathy with, which is simply being harsh, cracking down, we're not going to put up with this, is something that reads well in the public papers. And it's unfortunate.
Yes, I think also in relation to begging, I mean, that is an appalling judgment. If you recall, one of the issues in relation to begging was the Vagrancy Act was still on the statute books from the early 1820s, which makes begging a crime. But that is due to be abolished. But you can only, if you break the Vagrancy Act, get a fine of about £250. And the first answer to a begging case is that there is an earlier case that says begging is not antisocial behaviour unless it's aggressive begging. So it's begging accompanied by threatening someone, abusing someone. Sitting there with a cap or a box is not antisocial behaviour. It may be awkward, it may be embarrassing to walk past someone and not give them any money, but it's not antisocial behaviour. But in lots of cases I've seen, that argument's never been run. And that's another real issue, that people are getting injunctions made against them when they shouldn't have them being made against them at all. And then they're being enforced against them and they're going to prison for breach of an injunction that should never have been made in the first place.
I mean, I'm sure you're right, Rona, that in certain forms of antisocial behaviour, of course, the victims are an important part and they have had an increasing voice in this. But it seems that people accused of antisocial behaviour really have very little kind of voice. They may not have legal representation. They have very little public sympathy. I mean, James, do you think in a sense they're kind of forgotten people in the justice system almost?
Yes, they are. And I think another issue that concerns me is there's too much of a concentration on what happened to the individual there and then, rather than what the reasons were for them breaking the injunction. And that is a real worry, because there's not enough looking at the social context of this, i.e. did they have a social worker? Are they being properly supported by the health system?
So, James, I understand that the government have recently produced some proposals on how to deal with antisocial behaviour. The Labour Party obviously hope to form the next government, have got ideas for new respect orders. Have you had a chance to look at what's being proposed, and do you think there is any merit in what people want to do going forward?
I thought both sets of proposals were deeply depressing, because they were back to enforcement without any consideration as to actually how you address the problems caused by antisocial behaviour and why people commit antisocial behaviour and how you properly protect victims from antisocial behaviour. The only thing, that headline thing I saw from the Conservatives' proposals was like dealing with cases within 48 hours, which is just, it's as absurd as Tony Blair's marching kids to cash points, if you recall from the 1990s.
What was that about, marching kids to cash points?
Tony Blair proposed that antisocial behaviour orders should be toughened up. So, for example, if someone committed antisocial behaviour, the police could give them a fixed penalty notice and march them off to a cash point to pay for it. I mean, it was just preposterous and it was quietly dropped. The Labour proposals are odd because they say they're going back to looking at being tough on crime and being tough on the causes of crime. And then there was a lot of stuff about the current injunctions, the ones that we are so concerned about how draconian they can be, not being strong enough. Now, they may have a point in the sense that they have never been very well publicised and people don't know about them, but the idea they're not strong enough is just nonsense. The second point was the idea of this respect order. Now, I've not been able to work out at all what a respect order is going to be. Is it going to be a sort of extra tougher order after you've broken an injunction? Or is it just going to be the ASBO under a new name? Because they appear to be suggesting it's going to be for sort of like really persistent antisocial behaviour, but that was always the case with the ASBO. So, no, they're not impressive as far as I can see.
Rona, what do you think?
Well, I had exactly the same reaction as James to reading the government proposals. I thought it was a dreadful, poor document because it had nothing about the social background. It was treating it purely as though everybody has a choice, be social or antisocial. And I don't believe that is the case. I believe all of us would be social if we had the ability. And where you get people who are in very difficult circumstances, mentally unwell, addicted, going through terrible crises, you can't just tell them to behave. You have to support them to behave. We're not talking about the naughty four-year-old who's putting his fingers in the biscuit jar, where you can't say, just stop that. We're talking about adults who have a social and an economic and a familial background. So I thought it was a really retrospective document with no focus on justice or social equality at all.
James, the political parties are clearly concerned that victims are not getting the response they need or any response at all when they complain about antisocial behaviour. Surely until we deal with victims better, that demand for tougher action will only get louder.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I think one of the real problems, however, is that the police have started treating antisocial behaviour as if it's a civil matter. They don't attend antisocial behaviour where there's a dispute. They say, report it to your landlord, report it to your housing association, report it to the council. And if you recall, I think it was the Fiona Pilkington case in which she set her car alight with her and her child in after they had been subjected to persistent antisocial behaviour, and the police had really washed their hands of it. And, you know, antisocial behaviour, certainly in particular, when it is malicious antisocial behaviour that's not being caused by mental health issues, for example, should be treated as a significant crime by the police. And the real problem is that police resources have been massively cut and they see it as low-level stuff, unless it involves drugs, as far as I can see.
I agree. And interestingly, if you read the Fiona Pilkington case, which is very tragic, actually, what we are talking about was a series of crimes. You couldn't class it as antisocial behaviour. So it comes back to this issue of, is there a separate room for something which is civil, which is antisocial behaviour, which is separate from crimes? Anyway, we need to wrap this up because this is a fantastic discussion, but it's one which we could go on for a few hours with. So I'll hand back to Rob.
Yeah, this has raised a lot of big issues. I mean, I understand the Law Commission is looking at the whole question of contempt of court, which is slightly oddly the way in which enforcement of injunctions takes place. You're held to be in contempt of court if you ignore one. So perhaps there's some scope there for looking at some of the issues that we've been talking about. Can I ask each of you if you were the Law Commissioner or in charge of policy in this area, is there one thing that you would do to try and make this system work better? Rona, what would you do?
The one thing I would do, and I will do when they open up their consultation, is to ask a Law Commission to make a recommendation to remove imprisonment as an option for the court when the case concerns antisocial behaviour injunction and the breach of the injunction. If the antisocial behaviour involves serious harm, then it's a crime and it shouldn't be in a civil court. If it is what we think of as antisocial behaviour, being noisy, using abusive language, then it is a problem, but it's a social problem. It needs a social answer and it should not involve imprisonment. It's an abuse in my view, of the prison system, which is there for the most serious crime.
Okay. And James?
Mine would be in relation to contempt of court proceedings, that no one can be sent to prison for contempt of court unless they have been offered representation, and that the court has a much wider range of options open to it, akin to a criminal court, such as diverting to alternative services and making community orders.
Rob, what about you? You're head honcho law commissioner. What would you do?
Well, I've been quite shocked by what we've heard, really, and some of the penalties that are being dished out just seem wildly disproportionate to the conduct involved. The one thing I would do is what James said, I think, which is allow some of the alternatives, the community-based alternatives to imprisonment, to be available in some of these cases. For example, probation. For example, maybe electronic monitoring, which includes sobriety tax for people with alcohol problems. For some of these cases, surely that should be available.
I totally agree. Thanks, Rob, James and Rona. And you can find out more about current and proposed antisocial behaviour law and practice in our programme notes. If you enjoy the podcast, do subscribe. Till the next one, goodbye.